is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, with your pre-caucus show. We'll have a little history of how the caucus is developed, information for potential caucus goers, and a last-minute listen from a sample of caucus goers committed to a variety of candidates. So let's dive right in to learn what every caucus goer needs to know. Hopefully, this information will guide you through the process so you make the best use of your time. I think I'll start with the most essential time-saving information. Anyone who is not in line by 7 p.m. on February 3rd will not be admitted to the caucus. That's true for both Democratic and Republican caucuses. First, you have to be registered at the address where you plan to vote, and you must be registered for the caucus of the party you wish to participate in. You can't declare undecided, though it is perfectly legal to change your registration both before and after the caucus. But you have to do that at the county courthouse. If you are already registered at your correct address and party, you'll save yourself and other caucus goers lots of time. The two parties have very different ways to conduct their caucuses, but they agree on the basics. Get there, be on time, be registered, or get registered after you get there, and elect delegates to the county conventions. You can find your caucus location at iwillvote.com. Our first guest today is Judy Trumpy, Organizational Chair for the Story County Republicans. Judy, how do you select your candidates?
As the organization chair, I'm responsible for all the physical material that goes to each precinct caucus. Not only do I arrange for those locations throughout the county, but it could be in elementary schools, it could be in churches, it's in the high schools, etc. I arrange for those as well as try to get the temp chair and then the permanent chair and a secretary and a reporter lined up. And then in addition to that, I create a ballot. So this year's ballot is not very large. It looks like a cash register receipt that you would get at a grocery store, and I typed across the front a presidential straw poll, vote for only one, and then I put a little box before each of these three names, and the top one is Donald Trump, and the second one is Joe Walsh, and the third one is Bill Weld, and those seem to be the only three viable people for the president that I was made aware of. In fact, when my materials came from RPI to put in each of the precinct's boxes, we have little boxes that everything goes in. That's the only three that they had as well. So I lucked out there. And I didn't create a lot of ballots either, you know, like run off thousands and thousands, because I created maybe 25 for each precinct and then put in extra scratch paper if there were more than 25 people that would show up, because we are fairly certain that Donald Trump will win the Republican nomination.
How many precincts do you have?
We have 43 precincts in Story County. There are 20 in Ames alone, and then there are 23 outside of Ames. So, across the northern tier and the east eastern tier of the county, and then surrounding Nevada, and then the southern part. So 43 altogether.
Well, you have some other business besides the straw poll, is that correct?
Oh, yes. We start off the beginning with the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we pass the Lincoln bag, we call it. It's just the please contribute as much as you can to the Story County Republican Party, because our money goes for this and this and this. And in fact, I created a sheet of paper that could be read to the attending voters at each precinct to give them an idea of how we use the money, so that they know they're not just dumping it into a hole. And so we pass that along, And then we do the temporary chair, who's already been elected or selected before the caucus, either offers himself as the permanent chair or asks if there's anyone who wants to be the chair. And then we vote on that, and then we vote for a secretary. And the only thing the secretary does is fill out all the official forms that come from the state, Republican Party of Iowa, as well as officials in the state, probably Secretary of State's office. We fill them out for that. The white copy goes to the auditor's office, so she has an idea of who's been elected chair and secretary and central committee person. The pink copy goes to the auditor, and we keep the yellow copy, so we can use that for information on who volunteered. We quit with electing the chair and the secretary, and then we got that all posted on these on Form A, and then we moved to the presidential poll, and that is the straw poll. And just as an aside, it's been suggested that we hold the poll after we do some of the other business, because people have a tendency to come, vote, and then leave, and they don't have an idea of what goes on. The Central Committee people, then we elect, or people volunteer to be the county, district, and state delegates. That's also done. And then at the very end, we talk about the platform planks. And I created a sheet of paper, not just maybe a quarter of a paper, regular typing paper, and just put here my name is, and my suggestion for a platform plank is. And there's several lines that they can write down. And what has been done in the past is that those are usually gathered up by someone that's acting as an official at the precinct, maybe the precinct member who belongs to that precinct, and gather them all up, and then we put them in a pile and we send them on to district. And those folks who choose to be on the platform committee will look at all of them and decide whether they should be put in into the platform or not. And then after the platform planks are talked about, there is a motion to adjourn if there isn't any other business, and usually there isn't, but things are dynamic, so someone might mention something and there'll be a little chatter about it, but then things close. I look for activity to be about a full hour, and then that should be it.
And with the planks, so the planks just go directly to the platform committee, is that right?
What I understood is there used to be a lot of discussion about the planks, and people would spend a lot of time deliberating on them and how they should be worded. But I think in the past it got so that people wouldn't attend because of that, and they wanted to. Well, that was another reason to have the poll a little bit later, because people would vote and then leave. They wouldn't have a voice in what was going on. And so they just decided to defer them to people who will serve on the platform committee.
Do you count your straw poll during the caucus, or do you just send it all on?
No, we do count it. Once we collect all the ballots, then people from, like, you could have a Donald Trump, a representative, a Joe Walsh, and a Bill Weld, and all three of those people could stand around and watch the counting of the ballots so that they are assured that they're accurate. And that's usually done off to a side, you know, either the auditorium or the stage that we're sitting on or the room that we're in. And then as soon as that is done, they announce the winner. But hopefully some of this other business will get done while the counting is being done.
And do the number of votes in each precinct, that goes on to the state, or?
Yes. In fact, I had asked the RPI student representative, or he's hired by RPI. I said, you know, I've never had to question this before, but should we save those ballots? And he said, yes, probably, for records, if there's any question. And so I included in each of the boxes a Ziploc bag, a gallon Ziploc bag, so that they would all fit in there. in case, you know, things go. Something might, well, just things happen, and it's just good to save your paper trail so that you can always document what has happened. And, you know, as we're talking here, I'm thinking to myself, the caucuses are a party function. Sure, we have an idea of how it's going to go. But, you know, Ted Cruz won the Republican caucus in 2016, but he slowly lost, you know, he died away just like the rest of them did. And so it's like, yes, it's interesting to see how it's going to go. Doesn't carry the weight, you know, that a regular election does.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI, and you just heard from Judy Trumpy, Organization Chair for the Story County Republican Party, guiding us through the things we need to know about attending a Republican caucus next Monday, February 3rd. Both parties have 43 precincts, but the Republicans haven't changed their rules since 1972, so they can handle all precincts in just 4 caucus locations. Judy just told you how that works. The Democrats need a different location for each precinct, and their largest was 700. So let's turn to Madeline Anderson and Lewis Rosser as they explain the much more complicated process the Democrats have. How can the Democrats be so complicated? Our guests will describe it, including changes in the rules that are new this year.
Hello, my name is Maddie Anderson. I'm the chair of the Story County Democrats.
Hi, I'm Lewis Rosser, and I'm the chair of the caucus committee for Story County Democrats.
My name is Wes Martin, and I'm here to ask some questions today concerning caucus math.
Well, so what kind of math do you need to concern yourself with?
Well, the math would be concerning the delegates and their assignments to the state convention and national convention and how it translates from the caucuses.
Well, that turns out to be a pretty big problem.
Right.
We'll just start by saying, what are the basic caucus rules that all caucus goers need to understand?
Okay, everybody must be in line by 7 o'clock on caucus night at their proper precinct caucus location, and they must be a registered Democrat. If they are not, they may register as a Democrat at the caucus location.
And how do they find out what their caucus location is?
The easiest way is to go to iwillvote.com and just type in your address, and it will tell you where to go.
And Lewis?
Yeah, that, you know, once they've gotten in line, they will register if they're on pre-registered in advance, or like Maddie said, they can register right there at the polls. Then they will enter the caucus area, and once everybody is registered, then the caucus will be called to order. And the agenda for that evening, really the three primary things that the caucus accomplishes is, one, determining the delegates to the county convention based on the presidential preferences for that particular precinct. Secondly, we'll discuss or forward issue platforms to the county platform committee. And lastly, we'll elect delegates to the county convention and representatives for the precinct for the next 2 years on the county central committee.
So a lot of this is really county-level business.
That's really what it is, primarily, aside from the presidential preference, yes.
And how would you accomplish this business without caucuses?
Well, actually, we do meet as a precinct caucus annually. Even though some people think this only happens every 4 years, this actually happens annually where precincts get together for at least once a year to do business like this.
And the resolutions that go into the for the county convention, mm-hmm. I've heard some people call them planks.
Planks, resolutions, you'll hear a lot of different terms used. And over the years, that process has changed. It really depends on the size of your precinct. So if you're in a precinct that, let's say, only has one delegate that's being selected to go to your precinct, and you only have about, you know, 20 to 40, 50 people that come to your caucus, there is time to discuss the different platform planks or ideas that people bring to the caucus and vote. You know, amend them, vote them up or down, and then pass them on to the county platform committee to consider. In our larger precincts, where the presidential preference process it can take, you know, multiple hours, we really don't have time for that. So what caucus goers will hear and see is that there'll be a motion by the chair to entertain a motion to bring those individual caucus platform resolutions forward, and then without discussing them or amending them, they'll just be passed on to the county platform committee to consider. That committee will meet prior to the county convention and bring all of those resolutions together and propose one document to the county convention to consider.
And what happens with the county convention platforms? Does that have any influence on the national?
Certainly. From the county, so it starts at the precinct, then it goes to the county. From the county, it goes to the Congressional District Convention, where it then goes to the state convention. And from our state convention platform, those platforms are taken to the national convention.
How do caucus goers submit resolutions for or planks?
Sure. Good question. There will be blank forms at the caucus for them to fill out, or they can just bring them typed up brief. There's no particular form it must be on. They can type them up and bring them in, or handwrite them for that matter, bring them to the caucus. If they'd like to have the form, that form is available at the Iowa Democratic Party website, and they can download that and fill it out and bring it in. It's really up to them.
I saw a platform plank online. Someone said, here, it was climate change.
Sure.
You know, this is one to submit.
There you go.
And it was already, you could just print it out and take
yep.
it with you.
Yep. And you'll find a lot of different special interest organizations, whether it's climate change, labor issues, education issues, who have those pre-written platform planks that they encourage their members to bring to every precinct and submit. And that's perfectly okay.
I'd like to ask people, as they are bringing these planks, they need to be aware that the platform has a word limit. And so they should try to make their planks as brief as possible. Otherwise, the platform committee is going to cut it down to make it shorter. And if there is a specific part that you want to make sure is included, that you should boil that down yourself to just one or two lines.
Since we've taken care of this, what used to be routine business that we had to do before the presidential preference groups, could you describe the process for that? And especially there's a new change, I believe.
Well, there's several new changes, and we should probably address some of those right now. Probably the most important change that people need to be aware of when they come to the caucus this year is that there will be only two alignments, and that's unlike in the past where there were three. There will be only two alignments that people will be able to do. Everybody will participate in the first alignment and record their first preference for their presidential candidate. After that, the groups that are viable will be solidified. In other words, once you're in a viable group in the second alignment, you will not be allowed to move to another group. And that's a change from previous years.
You just heard a description of the Democratic caucus process by Madeline Anderson and Lewis Rosser, with just a few words from Wes Martin, who is the math expert, with just a few words from Wes Martin, who is helping us with the math. He has a much longer interview that we didn't have time for this morning, but will be on our caucus night special that will be broadcast nationwide from KHOI. The situation described by Madeline Anderson and Lewis Rosser calls out for commentary, And we have Stefan Schmidt, Iowa State University political science professor, who's been reporting on the caucuses in Iowa for Iowa Public Radio for decades as Dr. Politics. As you'll hear, he was also active in writing some of the very first rules for the Democratic caucuses since 1972 and has followed them closely through the many years.
Interesting caucus tidbit that the media misses is that the caucuses in 72 and 76 were really events only for party activists and leaders. There was no media expected. They were just party business meetings. And so when we wrote the rules for the caucuses here in Ames, we didn't think that other people besides Democrats who were pretty engaged would want to know how it all works. So we made the rules really complicated. And so then all of a sudden they become famous and the news media wants to know how this works and they get really confused. And over the years, more and more people say, well, this doesn't seem right. You're flipping coins and doing other things. And it's because the caucuses were never meant to be understood by the media and the public. They were meetings of active Democrats. They were not a big international or national event. We've made the caucuses even more complicated with the new rules, not less complicated.
How is it that they're more complicated?
Now they're going to be reporting three different results as opposed to pretty much just reporting, as they used to do, the results of the delegate equivalency. And so the news media is going to go, well, what is this? Because they're going to report the first alignment and then the realignment, and they're going to report three different results. And I'm looking at it and going, my eyes are glazing over. And why do we have to have a almost 40-page booklet to describe how to run a caucus when the Republicans just go in and they have a few speeches, and then they vote on paper, secret ballot, put it in a little box, count it, and that's it. And it works perfectly well. There is no advantage to the way we are doing our caucuses. There's no advantage to it. It doesn't produce anything that is better than if people came in well-informed and just voted.
How many caucuses have you covered professionally?
Well, I started with the first one in 1972, which was the first after the reforms with McGovern and so on. And so do the count every 4 years since 1972. I've been at Iowa State for 50 years. This is my 50th year. So I've seen all of the good and also the bad and the ugly.
Okay, so let's start with the good. What's good about the Iowa caucuses?
Well, I think we know that engagement, giving people a chance to not just vote mindlessly, but maybe at the end to have a discussion amongst themselves in each precinct is a wonderful thing. It's a much more sophisticated way to make a political decision than to just look at some television ads and then vote in a primary on your way to work or on your way home. It really is grassroots democracy. And I think everyone who looks at the caucuses says that's one of the wonderful advantages. The second one, of course, is that we want the candidates to listen to regular people as they campaign. You can't do that if you go into a huge auditorium with 20,000 people and you give a big speech and there are flags and music playing. You're just talking to the people. In the run-up to the caucuses, all of the candidates have to actually go and meet people and get asked a lot of questions that they may not have ever heard before. And so it gives candidates a wonderful training on what people are thinking and how they need to respond to what people are thinking. And I think that's an advantage as well.
Is that what they call retail politics?
It is retail politics. It is the grueling kind of marathon or triathlon that we put politicians or would-be candidates for president through. They have to have stamina. They have to have a sense of humor. They have to put up with all kinds of conditions that pop up, you know, snow and ice and large hogs at the state fair and deep fried food and people asking them things that sometimes they have never even thought about, much less had to respond to. And it really is, I think, a test of the capacity of candidates if they can make it through the caucuses and arrive on caucus night still intact. And, of course, to communicate well enough with people that they get 15% in each precinct or in enough precincts to come up either the winner or number two or number three. This is the other thing people forget. It's not just number one, but one, two, and three have done very well going out of Iowa since Jimmy Carter came in second place. But one, he was the only human being who won. It was undecided who had more votes in the precincts in 76. So,
well, do you have any comments about the decision to make undecided a locked-in category?
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats who were here before were talking about. If you're undecided, you have to stay undecided.
Yeah. I don't understand the rules yet. I have a booklet right here in front of me that's almost 40 pages long that I'll have to read, which is the precinct guidelines. Which I think is a real problem. You know, anytime you have to read a huge manual for something to work, like a phone or anything, it gets complicated. So the new rule is that if you say you're undecided, you can't switch to other groups. Is that what the new rule is?
Yes.
That, I think, you know, is not the advantage that people had before in the caucuses, which was they could come in undecided and listen to some of the speeches from supporters of the different candidates and make up their mind actually in the precinct and say, oh, well, yeah, I never thought of that. So, yeah, I think I'm going to support, you know, Elizabeth Warren or, you know, Joe Biden. If they go in undecided and they have to stay undecided until the convention, I'm guessing they should just stay home. Because there is no rational reason why you should force people to remain undecided when at some point they may change their mind. And usually that happened in the actual caucus, on caucus night. If I was a Democratic leader, and I'm not, I'm nonpartisan, I would have said, let's simplify it. Let's make it much easier for people to understand and for people to participate in. And that doesn't seem to me to be the direction that we're going. So,
you've heard from the political pros at the local level. Let's hear from some potential caucus goers that we spoke to around Ames.
KHOI is interviewing the supporters of various candidates about what issues attracted them to this candidate. Who is the candidate of your choice?
I'm a supporter of Elizabeth Warren.
One of the reasons I wanted to interview you was that you seem to be very active in your caucus. Are you doing some organizing?
I'm door knocking as assigned around Ames, and I'm not one of the busiest, most active persuading door knockers, but I'm in there. I do every couple of weeks. I'll do a slug of door knocking, about 30 doors. And I'm excited about the caucus coming up for our precinct number 6. It's one of the biggest in the state, I understand. And I'll be a helper there. I'm not the preference chair.
And why are you supporting Elizabeth Warren?
I'm supporting Elizabeth Warren because I think she'll work well with the tax code. We have in this country an absurd concentration of wealth. It's worse than the Gilded Age. And it's strangling opportunities for people in this country and all over the world. The people have so much wealth, they don't know what to do with it. They can't spend it. And then on the other side, the majority of the people are struggling. And this is not because those wealthy people are so much smarter than we are or so much harder working. It's because the tax code lets them get away with this. They're not paying for the roads. They're not paying for all the infrastructure that allowed them to get so much money. They're paying for wonderful legal representation and lobbying, and that's how they got what they've got. And I think Elizabeth Warren is the one positioned and educated to deal with that issue because she's been working on it for years. She's taught, she's studied, she's positioned. She can fix the tax code, and that'll cause a lot of other good improvements around the whole country. And on the other topics, she's good, and she's certainly in there with the other Democrats. And it will go well when she's working as a team with them as president. But those are just other issues that are not foremost for me.
Who do you plan to caucus for?
I'm actually a precinct captain for Andrew Yang.
Why do you support him?
So I obviously am an Iowan. That's how come I'm caucusing. I'm actually born and raised in a really small town in central Iowa. I grew up on a family farm. My town is 300 people. And in my high school graduating class, you know, 10 years ago, I graduated with 44 kids, and there were seven towns in my graduating class in my school district. And every single one of those towns is decreasing in size due to lack of local jobs. And so many of the people, of the parents of my former classmates were either farmers, teachers, or commuted to different manufacturing jobs. And so I saw a lot of detrimental work that happened in my small town and the other small towns around me when some of these larger manufacturing corporations decided to start automating processes or bring some of those factories overseas. And so I really feel that Andrew Yang is the only candidate who actually truly understands what some small towns are going through and wants to preserve their livelihood, because we're the backbone and these heartland towns can really make a difference. And it's not fair to us to be ignored and to just be pushed off to the side. A couple of candidates have actually said that, well, if your town can't make it, then maybe it's not worth it being there. And so really, Andrew Yang's the one who focuses with both the universal basic income based off of a value-added tax, and then with that, encouraging the entrepreneurial spirit, I think will really increase the livelihood and viability of a lot of our small towns in Iowa and in the Midwest.
Thank you.
I decided to support Vice President Biden because I have two parents that have pre-existing medical conditions. My dad's a cancer survivor, and my mom has a number of health issues. And I'm looking for a candidate that will strengthen our healthcare system and lower the cost of prescription drugs. Because right now some of their medications are very high, and just want to make sure that they continue to have coverage, even though they have, you know, pre-existing conditions that would, if the Congress changed the law, they might not be covered under that healthcare system. So it's important to me that they still, you know, have strong coverage and they have access to affordable prescription drugs.
Who are you going to support on caucus night?
I'm supporting Pete Buttigieg.
Why are you supporting him?
I've read his book, and I've watched the debates, and I've been to three of his local statewide presentations. He seems to me that he does have the Midwestern work ethic and the character that we respect here in the Midwest of being able to be dependable. I also think that he has experienced and has multiple perceptions of the world rather than a single one.
What perceptions are you talking about?
Well, he's been a member of the military, which is very structured, and it's placed him in a place where he was an outsider. He's also been an outsider in this country as being a gay. He's also been a member of a vibrant intellectual group where there's sometimes heated exchanges. And so I think this has given him a broad base to look at what's happening in the world.
Do you want to say anything about his spirituality?
Well, I think that obviously he's been raised in a Christian family with, again, the Midwest work ethics. He obviously has come to grips with any conflicts that's there. I also see that as a plus, that he's been able to resolve a very personal conflict with himself and his former beliefs and be comfortable with it. And I think, again, this is the type of thing that a person that's leading this country is going to have a lot of talent at.
So what do you think the most important issue that he represents?
Really, it's his being around and sharing his character. I think that we are to a point that we need a leader who we can depend on, who does what he says that he's going to do. I think we as a nation like predictability and responsibility and reliability. And I think that demonstrating this from the Oval Office is something that we're missing.
What candidate do you support?
I'm supporting Amy Klobuchar.
And you're going to caucus for her?
Yes, I am.
Why are you supporting her?
Amy uses what I call common sense approaches to big problems. I respect her integrity. I respect her record in the Senate. I think her Midwestern values are apparent in her policy positions.
And what is the most important issue for you?
There are two issues that are most important for me, one of which is the division that exists in the country right now. And I think Amy can help bring that divisiveness down. And also, I think climate change and health care are very important to me. And her positions on each of those policies is in line with what I think is best for the country.
I'm curious about her positions on climate change.
So she would get us back into the Paris Climate Accord, day one. That's in her policy position statements. She believes we should be good stewards of the earth, regardless of how we feel about climate change. The debate isn't so much about fossil fuels and non-renewable sources of energy. It's we should be responsible anyway. I know that some people left of me aren't particularly happy with her views on fracking. She doesn't want to dismiss the use of fossil fuels outright. Amy is actually interested in seeing safe nuclear fuel developed.
Would you be caucusing for Steyer?
I believe I will. I've narrowed it down, and I like that he has been committed for so long to really important issues like voting rights, you know, getting rid of corruption, and also for sure climate change. He's been a serious advocate for climate change beyond most of the other candidates. And I really believe that he's committed, and I don't care that he's a millionaire as long as he's doing good things. And he did give up a lot of his income in a promise or a commitment, and I think that's pretty commendable to me. It is hard to decide this time because we do have so many people with a lot of the same platforms and important issues. I think it comes down for a lot of people, like, who's going to win.
I'm a supporter of Bernie Sanders. We have a lot of great candidates. I'm really proud and happy with the Democratic field. However, some of them have changed their minds on some issues in ways that if they're this easily influenced over the last 6 months, then right. how is it going to go in there in Washington? And Bernie Sanders has been consistently the same person since he was a very young man. Mm-hmm. So I've wavered away and then back to him and really support what he stands for. Mm-hmm. I think he has the best interest of everyone in the country instead of an elite few. Although I do believe that I agree with Thomas on the influence of money in politics and in everyday life, that both parties are susceptible to being easily influenced by money. So we really have got to get money out of politics all the way around it.
Are you planning to attend your caucus?
I am planning to attend the caucus.
And who are you caucusing for?
I'm going to start with Marianne Williamson and see what goes from there.
I thought she suspended her campaign.
She did suspend her campaigns, but she's not out of the realm of people that you can caucus for.
Now, how do you plan to do that? When you go, I understand you have preference choices.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to a corner and... One is undecided, and that's mm-hmm. undecided is you can't decide to join another viable group or make a group viable by coming out of the undecided group.
Correct. That's my understanding, too. You have to stay in the undecided group if they have 15%.
That's right. By caucusing for Marianne, how do you plan to proceed to have your voice heard?
Well, just, you know, establish that she's still in the running and that anybody that wants to come and be in that group can be in that group. And if nobody shows up to be in the group, then I'll make a choice, you know, after that.
From the beginning, you designate
yes.
for...
Yeah, because there may be people that show up that aren't even aware that she's still a viable candidate that, you know, even though she said she suspended it, she did not pull out of the running. Suspending and pulling out completely are, I think, two different things, to my understanding.
Well, then the second question is, why do you support her?
Well, if you listen to any of the talks that she's given, you know, first on my agenda for my children and grandchildren, which I have three daughters and hoping one day to have grandchildren, is climate change. And she seemed to be the most – she was talking about a World War II effort to address it. And I believe in my heart that that's what it's going to take. And if you don't have somebody on the front lines that can establish that as a priority, besides many other priorities that we have in this country, it won't really matter after 11 or 12 years or whatever it takes. If there's truly a tipping point coming and we reach that point in time, then, you know, one of the questions Marianne often asked, and especially in the last 2 months that I noticed, is how many people in the audience here are planning on, you know, or have been told by their children that they're not going to have children? And the reasoning behind that is because we don't know what's coming in this world. And you know, our climate is obviously changing and there's detrimental weather patterns that are happening. And you got to ask yourself, you know, why? And is this going to continue or is it going to get better or is it going to get worse?
A collage of voices of potential caucus goers. Let's end our show with a little preview of what's coming up this weekend before the caucuses. You've heard from one of our caucus goers who's seeking for a president who will set in motion a mobilization like that of World War II to combat the climate crisis. If that speaks to you, you may be interested in the Climate Crisis Parade this coming Saturday, February 1st, in Des Moines. The speakers will call upon the hundreds of members of the U.S. and international press who will be in Des Moines to cover the Iowa caucuses to step up their coverage of the climate crisis. Steve Shivers, one of the organizers, said, despite its prolific coverage of the conflagrations in Australia and California and other natural disasters that the world's scientists have directly linked to climate change, the press does not emphasize this connection nearly enough. This has to change. The media is where people get their facts, and as such, it has a critically important responsibility to let people know that, without bold action on the part of our leaders, the future of their children, grandchildren, and future generations of our life on the planet is seriously jeopardized. With 65 organization sponsors, the Climate Crisis Parade will be one of the most widely sponsored events in Iowa memory. We invite all Iowans concerned about the growing climate crisis to join us. Parade participants will gather at Cowles Commons in Des Moines at 12 noon. That's this coming Saturday, February 1st. Individuals and organizations interested in participating may visit the coalition's Facebook event page or RSVP on Eventbrite. The other event occurring this weekend is in Ames, a musical by Clark Ford, America, I Miss You. And here's Clark to tell us about it. And for this weekend, while we're getting ready for the caucuses on Monday, we have a musical, an original musical by Clark Ford. Maybe some of you can remember his past musicals. And this one is 2020, the musical, America, I Miss You. And, of course, it has a little political twist. Clark, could you tell us a little about what to expect?
Well, thank you, Susan. This show is about a family that, like many, it transcends both sides of the political spectrum and has to come to cope with the great divide, the great political divide and cultural divide in this country. And so it's a comedy drama. There are some fun and certainly some very heartwarming parts, but there's also some drama in the show. I think it's very interesting.
This actually draws on some characters from an earlier musical. Did you have one in 2016? Are these some of the same characters?
Many of the characters were in a musical written and set in 2016 called 2016, the musical. More decades prior to that, musicals that I wrote that were set in previous decades. So my shows, all of which have been written in the last 10 years, have followed members of this family over five decades.
So can you tell us anything about the drama of this particular show?
Well, in this family, we have both conservatives and liberals, and they don't always see eye to eye. The story arcs in the show deal with different relationships among the people. We have a conservative husband and wife. We have a liberal husband and wife. We have a sister to one of the characters, and we have a character who's 14. And not very political at all. And they're all trying to figure out the landscape of what's going on and what's the right thing to do.
And as always, you have a lot of original songs. You just gave me the recording. You probably have at least 10 that have not been heard before, right?
There are a large number of songs that have not been in my previous musicals, yes. And the music spans from country, pop, folk, patriotic, and sacred.
I think the titles on these songs are intriguing, and of course these recordings will be available at during intermission, right?
Mm-hmm.
I Don't Want to Work Today.
I Don't Want to Work Today is sort of the theme song of the sort of the conservative a male figure who's getting near retirement age, and he just wants to quit.
And then you have
I'll Be Your Rock is an upbeat country love song, and there's some things that happen to one of the characters, and her husband is there to support her and sings that song. Well, the title song for the musical is America, I Miss You. And this is it's a patriotic folk protest song, I guess you would say. Yeah. I really like it, at least. Now, another song that's in the show is Call Your Kids. It has to do with the relationship between family members, a father and his daughter. The daughter sort of inspires him to write this song. Another song is Anthem. This is a song that reaches across generations. It's sung by one of the older characters to the youngest, saying, you know, I'm ready to pass the torch to you. And, you know, we're putting a lot of hope in the next generation to solve the problems that we didn't get solved. The Smallest Act of Kindness is a song about being at very, very low ebb and being appreciative of any kindness that can be shown and how important that is. And there is a religious song, The Lord is My Shepherd, because we have religious characters. And so that's one of my favorites. It's a duet, and it's a really lovely arrangement.
Well, thank you. Well, I think we really need to listen to America, I Miss You. So here it is.
America, I miss you, but in my dreams you're still alive. A place that I believed in, that honored truth instead of lies. A place where every man, woman, and child had worth. A place where people valued the beauty of the earth. I can see you in my mind. I didn't ever want to part. I remember with tears of joy, and your passing breaks my heart. Oh, America, I loved you so. It's hard to let you go. America, I still hold you dear. America, don't give in to fear. America, I miss you. How you once stood so strong for decency, democracy, for right over wrong. A place where freedom rang from every hill and peak. A place that honored dignity and lifted up.
The show is Friday night, January 31st at 7 o'clock. At Unity Church of Ames, that's at 9th and Kellogg in Ames. And also the next afternoon, Saturday afternoon, February 1st at 2 o'clock. There are no tickets for the show. Free will donations will go to Access, the Ames Assault Care Center.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Susan Franzen, your host for today. Other voices you heard were Judy Trumpy, Madeline Anderson, Lewis Rosser, Wes Martin, Stephen Schmidt, Caucus Goers, and Clark Ford. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, which includes links to today's stories. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Other music you heard was from the CD Andean Flute and from America, I Miss You, from the CD of the same name by Clark Ford. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.